The Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities at Bard College is hosting its 8th annual international conference from Thursday, October 15th to Friday the 16th on Bard's Annandale on Hudson campus. The two-day conference, Why Privacy Matters, asks questions like these. What do we lose when we lose our privacy? Reading on Kindle, searching Google, and using cell phones leave a data trail of intimate details. Governments and businesses track our comings, goings, and doings. So, why do we willfully participate in the loss of our privacy? How is it that we rarely register its loss? Do we simply value privacy less? Is it time to ask why privacy matters? How can a right to privacy and a meaningful private life exist today? So now that your head hurts, Roger Berkowitz is academic director of the Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities at Bard College and the associate professor of politics, philosophy, and human rights. He joins us this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's good to be here, Joe.
Very nice to have you with us. David Brin also joins us via telephone. He is an American scientist and award-winning author of science fiction. He has served as visiting scholar at NASA in, correct me if I'm wrong on this, exobiology?
Yeah.
Excellent. David, thank you very much for being on the program. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great.
Very nice to have you with us. So, Roger, let us begin with you of how this particular conference came to be. As I mentioned, this is the 8th time you've been doing this. So how did it come about originally?
Well, we pick our topics somewhat related to Hannah Arendt, but also trying to really think about what's important in the world today. It's a politics and humanities center. And I found myself over and over again with a law degree clicking agree, agree, agree on all those privacy agreements that one gets on websites.
That we don't read.
That we don't read. And as a lawyer, I know I'm supposed to, but I know I don't. And I found myself really wondering how much I should be posting on Facebook, how much I put on Twitter, on these other things. The Arendt Center has a lot of social media. It's something I don't as much understand, but I try and understand it to the extent I can. And a lot of people are very worried about privacy. You hear, we have to protect our privacy, we have to protect our privacy. And I would say to these people, well, do you use the internet? Do you use social media? Do you have a cell phone? And they would say, of course. And like, we have no privacy. And Scott McNeely of Sun Microsystems was famous about 10 years ago, but he's repeated it many times since then with the line, you have no privacy, get over it. It doesn't matter. And what I started to think about, since Hannah Arendt's work is about the importance of both public and private and the distinction, and that you can't have a meaningful human life without a private life, what does it mean in our lives if we really do lose our privacy? And if we're going to argue for privacy in any meaningful way, we actually have to have a sense of why it matters, what's important about it. And what I think has happened is people have a general sense that privacy means something to them. They think it's important, but they don't really anymore articulate. We haven't been forced to articulate why privacy matters and what we lose when we lose our privacy. And I thought, this is an important conference. This is a topic that needs to be brought up. And that's how we decided to raise this issue.
I want to bring David into the conversation, and we will in just a second, but give me an idea of, so how do you cover your bases and who do you bring in to fully discuss this huge topic?
It's an excellent question. The first person I invited was David Brin, who we're going to hear from in a minute. He wrote a book, I think about 15 or 16 years ago, called The Transparent Society: Will Technology Force Us to Choose Between Privacy and Freedom? And the reason I invited him and the reason I thought he was important is we often see the debate between two sides. There's the privacy advocates. There's people like Edward Snowden who've been arguing for privacy. He's going to be speaking at the final keynote of the conference. And then there's the transparency advocates. There's the people who say, look, you have no privacy, get over it, or we'll all be better off if we just know everything about everyone, which is a one view of transparency. I think what I really was attracted to about David Brin's book was that he's an advocate of transparency, but not what we would call an absolute advocate of it. And he really was questioning and trying to argue that we need to protect privacy in some way, given the fact that the world is going to be more transparent. We also invited one or two of the leading privacy scholars, legal scholars in the country, Anita Allen, a woman named Rochelle Gersten, who's an independent scholar who wrote a wonderful book called The Repeal of Reticence about sort of the progressive era from about 1880 to about 1920, when she argued that progressive reforms and progressive ideology did away with the idea of reticence and privacy in American public culture. We bring in academics, we bring in business people, we bring in artists. We have a couple artists speaking, and also novelists and poets, about the importance of solitude or privacy for the creative process. We have business people talking about privacy in the sense of how one does business. And we have philosophers and political scientists, and of course, NASA scientists and science fiction writers. So we really try and, our view is to bring in as many different, not left or right, but many different perspectives of smart people who think about this question and get a conversation going.
David Brin, as you mentioned, penned the book, The Transparent Society: Will Technology Force Us to Choose Between Freedom and Privacy? Since the writing of that book, do you get the... Is it playing out how you saw it, David?
Well, in some details, yes. For instance, there's been a lot of excitement discussion of page 160 lately, because that page goes through a detailed description of what life on our streets might be like once cameras get small enough so that police wear them, and then citizens come out of their cars to greet the police wearing cameras as well. And that was back in 1997. I had an earlier novel called Earth that featured this back in 1989. The point is that right now, as we speak, technology that almost everybody reflexively thinks technology of observation, cameras that are getting smaller, faster, cheaper, better, and more mobile every year in a corollary to Moore's Law, that it's automatically going to lead to Big Brother. And this fear of Big Brother, which was engendered by a science fiction novel called 1984, is a good thing. It's a good thing that we fear it. But this fear has become so reflexive that the news media didn't even notice that 2013 was the best year for civil liberties in America in three decades, when the Obama administration and the courts together ruled that a citizen has an unlimited right to, if they're not interfering with the police, to record the police out on the streets. And this has resulted in a lot of revelations that are causing, you know, some anger on the streets and all that sort of thing. But the main effect is that cameras have become the great equalizers, like the Colt 45 supposedly was back in the old Wild West. And it has rebalanced the balance of power between authority and average citizens on the streets with zero really negative consequences. It's all positive sum. The cops are going to get better and quicker convictions of people who have actually done real things wrong. The juries will have better facts to deliberate, and people who are innocent will have recourse to the truth. This is a win-win, and the news media does not report it because it doesn't fit the narrative of gloom. Now, in The Transparent Society, I have a chapter that goes into how terribly important privacy is for the average person, but we're going to have to redefine it. It's going to be closer to home. There's going to be less of it, but it's just as precious as it always was. And so why do I disagree with Scott McNeil about that we have to give up all our privacy or get used to it? Because if we are free, if we are an assertively and confidently free citizenry, we will want some privacy because that's what humans want. And we'll vote ourselves some, and we'll insist on the technological balance that will let us have some. How will we do this? Freedom comes first. Freedom has to come first. Freedom comes before privacy. If we're a free people who know what the elites are doing, and I mean all elites of government, finance, foreign oligarchs, corporations, if we know what they are doing, and that's a hard job to do, but we've done it across the last 200 years. It's why we have this revolutionary level of freedom and privacy. If we do that, then as citizens we'll be able to demand the right to be left alone.
Mm. So we want it both ways, and you believe we can have it both ways.
Well, to some degree, but we have to choose the one thing that's more important first. A lot of our privacy aficionados and advocates say that we should start by limiting what government can see. But all that does is make our watchdogs less good at protecting us as watchdogs. What I want is choke chains around the necks of the watchdogs, and I want the watchdogs supervised. See, I want the aggressive, the assertive defense of liberty to be us supervising the elites, not us passing some rule that the elites promise, pinky swear, that they'll not look. That's not going to work. It never has. In 2003, we crushed what we thought was a government attempt to do this called total information awareness. And it just went away and hid in the NSA. And if you've ever been to an arcade and played the game Whack-A-Mole,
yes,
that's what's going to happen with these surveillance techniques. But a new word has been coined, and that is surveillance, S-O-U-S. And that surveillance is French for looking down from above. Surveillance is looking back up from below. And if we do this assertively, aggressively, then we won't have to limit what the government sees, because we'll be able to limit what they can do.
David Brin is a writer who will be speaking at the Why Privacy Matters two-day conference on October 15th and 16th on the campus of Bard College. Roger Berkowitz is the academic director of the Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities at Bard and joins us as well. Roger, and as you say, there will be many opinions discussed. One of the keynoters is Edward Snowden, who certainly helped put this subject very much on our radar and our map. Does he come into a conference like this as a wearing a white hat or a black hat?
Oh, I think that's a difficult question. I think there's somewhat of an age difference on that. I think the students at Bard are very excited to see him as a white hat man. A lot of our members who come from all over the country to these conferences, we have a membership, are a bit miffed that he's going to be speaking. I've gotten a couple complaints and other things of that sort. We're very happy to have him. I think he's raised absolutely essential issues. He has fostered the kind of discussion that needs to be had. He has come out very strongly that privacy matters and that we have to limit what the government can do. And I think he and David disagree on that. I haven't talked to David specifically about it, but I would assume that to be the case. And, you know, he's tried to articulate why he thinks privacy matters, and that's what we hope he will talk about at the conference.
So let me ask you, I'm going to ask both of you this question, and so I want you to, basically I want you to diagnose me, ever since this story broke, I have read a lot on it. I've read a lot of what he has read, what has been released, seen the documentaries, both pro and con. And I still don't know what to make of it. I just don't know what to make of it. If I had to give him a hat, I don't know which one to give him, because I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess I asked the question, that in a form of a question is, do you think I agree with you, Roger, that that's good for us to have this discussion. But do you think that that is sort of where we are, that we don't really know what is good and what isn't? We have to figure that out.
Well, on the question of privacy, yes. I mean, clearly in this, you know, David spoke about whack-a-mole, and every yeah. time you try and, you know, prevent the government from abusing its, or a corporation or anyone from abusing its privileges to surveil you, then another way comes up. I mean, it's one thing to say in a democracy that a government should have certain surveillance rights, and we announce what those are, and here's the rules. But when the government creates surveillance programs that not even most members of Congress know about, that's a problem. And I certainly think that for many of us, the exposing of that illegal and unacknowledged surveillance was something courageous and important. We can then ask how one should do such a thing. Should one go to Congress? Should one put oneself on trial? Stay in the country, et cetera. These are other questions. And by the way, I should say that at the conference following Mr. Snowden, Robert Litt will be speaking, who is the attorney for the NSA, a version of the NSA, who is actually in charge of prosecuting Mr. Snowden. So we'll have his viewpoint as well at the conference immediately following Snowden's talk. So I teach a course on moral courage at Bard, and Edward Snowden is the first person we read and talk about, and the students are very divided generally, but most people, I think, find him to be a very courageous whistleblower in this case. I don't know what David thinks.
David Brin, I'll let you weigh in on this in the few minutes we have left.
There's about 2 hours worth of different topics there.
Well, we have 3 minutes, so go ahead.
First off, I don't disagree with Edward Snowden's I think that his existence and him as a general phenomenon is a reflection of great health in our society, and that is the overall effect of Edward Snowden was to reveal that we needed to have this conversation about what's legal, and reforms resulted. So he fits somewhere along the spectrum of whistleblowing. But Gandhi would have, and Martin Luther King would have said, take your time in jail. That proves your sincerity as a whistleblower. Don't raise suspicions that you were, from the very beginning, a Russian spy, whether or not that's true. The fact of the matter is that that his overall notion that we must hold government accountable by looking at government is the correct one. He used a sledgehammer. He did not follow all of the proper step-by-step methods that a careful person would have in order to qualify as a civil disobedient whistleblower. But, you know, not everybody knows how to do that. Not everybody's read up on how to do that. So, again, I agree with you. I'm reserving my judgment, but I will say this. The conversation that he provoked resulted in reforms, that more reforms to allow us to supervise government better are needed. I, in the end, think that there is a positive sum game. We do not have to blind our government in order to be safe from the government. We need to supervise the government. Because in the Transparent Society, I point out one thing called the ratchet effect, and that is the next time something terrible happens, the public will panic and they will vote to withdraw the protections against government looking. That these are weak, whereas if we install systems for supervising government, for making sure that inspectors general are independent, for example, and that we can investigate the NSA down to the last corner desk office, that is a protection that won't necessarily go away the next time there's panic.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but as you indicated, there is certainly much more to be discussed, which is why you're having a two-day conference on this on these very matters. The Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities at Bard College is hosting its 8th annual international conference Thursday, October 15th and Friday the 16th at Bard. You can find out more at bard.edu, bard.edu. Roger Berkowitz and David Brin, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. It's a great pleasure to have you both on the program.
Thank you, Joe.
Terrific.
Thank you very much. Again, you can find more about why privacy matters and the two-day conference by going to bard.edu, bard.edu, and it takes place October 15th and 16th. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.